Mr. Hay, Reel 3, just to touch on some other parts of possibly your experience there, were they very strict on appearance and kit inspections and things, both while you were with the ordinary training group and then when you were taken out into the potential officers group? Did you spend a lot of time on bull, spit and polish?
Yes, it was very, very strict. What fooled us a bit was when we first went there, the equipment they issued us was leather. They'd run out of the webbing, and there were these two large pouches with leather. Now, not only did we get that, but we were told they had to be saddle silked, which again threw us. So, anyhow, they had saddle silked after. Easier than doing webbing in the sense of it, obviously. But they were very keen on everything being in precise order, kit inspections, and so on. We were lucky to have a very good sergeant, young, enthusiastic, good soldier, and a noble corporal who came, I think, but they were extremely good.
Did you find it too much, the sort of amount of preparation you have to make, did you enjoy it? Did they use the stick man thing for guard parties?
Yes.
Could you just explain what it was?
I'll explain it better when I get to the archives.
We'll leave it till then, right. Anything else about your period of basic training and then with the potential officers group that you recall?
No, I used to watch the officers' mess, or the next door to the officers' mess there was the OC's house, and he had a really charming, smart wife, and boy, but you couldn't help but watch something different when it played around. And, I found out this OC was a man called Major Morabedard, who had a good bit of soldiery in Palestine, but he subsequently, very shortly after I left the depot, he got command of this 16th Battalion of Government Infantry.
He was the first commander of the 16th Battalion. I presume you wouldn't know much about him from being an ordinary private.
We knew he was a very smart soldier. He attracted attention whenever he appeared. And the fact that he'd done soldiering, he'd been against in Trevor, being decorated so recently, you know, meant something to us. And we think, well, there's a real soldier.
Were you very ambitious to become an officer? I mean, how would you have felt if you... I mean, because you could have been put out of the potential officer group, I suppose. Were you very keen to be an officer?
Oh, yes. I couldn't have dealt with it really any other way, seeing I had this parading around, and neighbours had seen me going out in that uniform, very short and marching around it. It would be dreadful if the war having started that time. I didn't fulfil any promise I might have had.
Did any of your group fail? Either the 7 or the 17?
No.
How did they actually determine? I mean, you were on this group. How long? How did they actually decide? I mean, what happened next?
I don't know. I could never fathom the minds of these people. They asked what I could have seen, but when I said, mostly it was about what school you were and things that I didn't think I would have asked of the potential officer.
So they did that, and then what happened?
Well, you never heard anything until the next time you were called for the next interview. But in all, before I became an officer, I had 13 interviews.
So, what happened as the interviews started to come to an end? I mean, after the 13 interviews, what happened?
Well, after the 13 interviews, I was then in Octu.
That's when they sent you to Oktu.
Yes.
And when would that be?
Well, I think I had some interviews, I think, including the 13 tours, the ones I had at Oktu.
Sorry. So when did they send you to Oktu?
After 4 months of basic training, which was
March 1940. And which Oktu were you sent to?
163, the Artists' Rifles, which was, if you know anything about it, was a superior bunch. It was an original officer finding unit in the TA, apart from with the Humber Artillery Company.
And where was that? And how many of you went there from Beverley?
Five of us went there. The other two were sent to Scotland.
And what were your impressions on arriving there? I mean, how did you fit into to this new setup?
Horrible.
Why?
We were addressed first of all by the guard sergeant, whom I think the guards had been about to transfer.
Why was that? Was
he treated us as the lords of the law? Well, that was it. Rattled off about six things we did not have to do. By this time, we were in a proper barrack. Risborough Barracks.
And what do you mean, things you didn't have to do? I mean, he was telling you what you weren't.
It had no brains whatsoever, you know. But then, and it was quite late in the day, and then he got somebody that threw a lot of equipment, weapon equipment. And it was the First World War equipment, two pouches here, three pouches there, which had not been used since the First World War. And he said, now, have that clean for first thing in the morning. And they said, what's first thing? He says, there's no first thing, get it done now. But he, you know, he was out, really just showing off. Because when we got there, there were other people, but there were sergeants from artillery that had been discontinued, who were coming into it. And they, you know, had no hope of knowing what infantry training was, but so we were a mixed bunch as far as infantry training was concerned.
What training did they put you through at the Oktu?
Well, again, it started with the basic weapon training. Did it for mostly 2 months of it. But
so it was almost a repeat of your basic training?
Yes. But with the Artist Rifles, I should explain, with it being an officer producing unit, on orders, you have to read what particular duties you have been assigned to the next day, and it would be company commander, orderly sergeant. You have to start to take part of the role of the thing. And I think my highest role was a boiler room man.
You didn't get any of the more prestigious roles. Did the training have anything different? I mean, you know, when you were being taught some weapons training or drill.
Well, again, you've got to remember that with things not going well in France, we were then put on an operational role as well as the training. And so it started to be that at night we were having to go out and have we dug trenches, which was in addition to the training. But it was just really a rehash of the arms, of the weapon training.
Did you find that dull? Because you presumably knew that.
Well, we thought this was a bit, you know, we were quite good. We had good training. We thought we should have been getting on with something else.
So this would be to bring everyone up to the presumably the same standard, so that the artillery sergeant.
Well, they had us on the thumbs, kicking our heels and this, that, and the other. Yes, I felt, having gone through it, it was a waste of time for us.
What did they move on from that then to?
Well, small manoeuvres, going out into the country, but again, sending you off on your own. This is in winter, very nice. Send you to pick up different clues throughout the routes and this, that, just so you can find your way around.
Did they do tutes at all, tactical exercise?
Yes. Ultimately, you were put in a group, first of all, and then you're given different roles in this group. If you are the company commander group and you're the general, it was interesting, but I don't think the instructors could do an awful lot with it. You know, you're stuck with what you call a sand table and all these trees and things. It wasn't my favorite teacher.
What sort of exercises were they doing in the tutes?
Well, enemy, there was certain things, defense and attack.
Were there any principles of defence and attack that they were trying to get through to you in these exercises?
Well, the big thing was in defence you didn't expose yourself. And in attack you got away with it as quickly as possible to make yourself a target.
So it was pretty simple stuff?
Yes.
Do you think it was particularly relevant to the sort of situations you had to face in Italy?
Any of the employees sort of learned self-protection, spotting where colour was.
So you've got your real training for that in action, in a sense. What other training were you doing with the artist rifles?
I got on the rugby team. I don't think anything specific. There was spit and polish.
Yes, you were going to tell me about the stick man with the artist rifle.
Yes, well, when I was picked for guard duty, which I'd seen enough of going on, but this was the highlight of the sergeant. You've got a pal. You've got anybody I have would clean your books or lend you some special equipment. And you've got a pal to come down to the edge of the parade square with your boots, because that had been polished and your studs had been polished, and you put that on and then you went on parade and you were inspected. Now, I was doing very nicely. There was another chap in our squad, a nice chap, barrister, a bit of a greaser, and always used to have a barrister's way of putting things. And there came the two of us for Stickman. Now, Stickman, he was allowed to sit out of the guard and be a skivvy commanding officer of anybody who wanted to make an appearance somewhere. He would just excuse the forearm. But when it came down, so on my turn, my equipment was all right, my rifle was all right, and then they undid my tunic, and you had a white string around your neck with your two identity. And I saw them, you know, and look at this barrister's, and I lost Stick Man because they said I hadn't washed the string. And I promise you that is true. But that is, you know, what the ridiculous ends they were getting down to. But it did teach us, the best way was just to have everything like this smart and so on.
Did you enjoy that level of bull? You'd been all right with...
Yeah. I thought at that stage we were in a bad way in France, and I thought we should... I was hoping to do a month less officer training, you know, and get commissioned and get on with a proper job. But they didn't, they gave us the full 4 months training. But as I say, particularly in April and May, we were manning roadblocks with fresh troops coming through to go across the France, and right down to the end of May, there were still troops and equipment for us to go to France when others were streaming back from somewhere else. And the thing that had to land these is on top of our normal duties, we dug trenches. As per the book, I can dig a trench. As per the 1940 book, about steps, the river, the line, I didn't. And this was all taking extra time. And I thought, that wasn't it, because they said, you'll have to beware for parachutes. And I said, that's the way they'll come. So here we are, standing night after night in these trenches, waiting for parachutes to come. And I thought, well, they weren't far reaching. Of course, when Monty came on the scene, he said people have to be mobile, flexible, and not static. And here they were teaching us static.
Because that sort of trench wasn't very common, I've heard, in Italy. I mean,
not at all. You scraped away a bit of ground and just lay flat and put your gasket over your. They weren't any trenches.
So you found that was another part of your training, or incorporated in your training period, that you found a waste of time.
Yes.
Did they attempt to teach you how to behave as an officer? Now, I know you already knew that, but then you knew your infantry drill as well. Did they teach you certain ways of command, or?
I think in a subtle way. I think the first thing they said to us, now you'll find that you've got two plates, not one, and you'll not be used to that. Well, like that. The lower orders were taking them. But we were sufficiently intelligent. But no, I would say they didn't really teach us to be officers. Never got that stage.
Were you or other people afraid of being RTU'd, returned to unit? Because that must have been a threat. That
was yes, that was basically it. You've got so far, you're doing your best and following everything, not finding anything too difficult. It was tiring at times, and you felt you were unfairly treated by having been out all night, don't get some breakfast, then on parade or something. That they weren't adjusted to national circumstances. We could have been had parachutes, the enemy weren't that far away, and they could be at any time.
You'd have rather completed your training with a battalion like the 14th or the 17th.
You needed battalion training there, no battalion work.
Did any of them not come up to standard? I mean,
yes, two.
What was wrong with?
I've got their pictures. They were already in the artist rifles, but there were just two of the lads who didn't care too much about it, which I suppose were all right in the artist rifle originally, because they were elitist, you know, professional.
So they just didn't try hard enough.
No.
There was nothing particularly wrong with them.
No. They're not really nice chaps, but they had been kept. They eventually got through. But they had been kept back, and they told us, because they were the ones that we got most of our information from. They came into our squad, and they told us about.
So they'd failed the previous time.
They said, well, of course, their own officers had gone. They then got this swarm of guards in, and officers from other regiments. We had a dog for a White Horse major, who was the brother of the officer I had in the East Yorkshire, an older brother, and he was a...
In what way? What was wrong with him?
He was playing a part, but I think he played the part for Saul along with Indian troops that he thought he was still dealing with him. That we weren't thinking of a barbaric.
He treated you like idiots?
Yeah.
And you resented that then?
Not much we could do, but we all knew it.
Was there any final passing out procedure or analysis at the end of it? So you just completed the course.
In the end, once we got measured for our uniforms, we thought that's all right. Didn't tell you we passed, but I can't remember seeing anybody sent home. I believe they were, but I didn't know there were several squads of us. I was just in this.
Now, was there a question about which regiment you'd be commissioned into? Because although you'd wanted to be in the DLI, you'd had this, you had been at Beverley as well. I mean,
they asked you which you preferred and select three.
And which three did you pick?
Well, Dunlop Infantry.
That was your first choice.
Northumberland Fusiliers, and I think East Yorkshire.
And did you put them in precedence?
The
DLI,
yes.
Followed by the Northumbrians, then lastly the East. And you got your wish.
Yes.
So who were you sent to first?
Well, we came home on leave, and then I reported to the depot at Bronson.
And that would be round about July, would it?
4th July.
And what was the situation at Brandsburg Depot when you reported there?
It was chaotic. Not too many people moving around. I reported to the he was captain of a company, I think, but they didn't have companies there because it was with the depot, and of course beyond Bransford Castle, there were all the other camps with thousands of soldiers, but they had the mess in the castle, and I was with my friend West, we got through, and we reported, and we were told where were our ash plants. We had a nice leather covered stick, which was the thing. Good market. No good here. You officers have ash plants. So we don't know how we would know this. So we were sent into Newcastle with a truck, several of us, to go to a place called Merton's to get our kit, which of course was the normal bath, folding bath, chair. But particularly the ash plant that was you may have gone without your trousers, but the notes were either didn't have your ash plant. And so we just collected those, went back to Bronson. I think I had one meal there, but I was impressed by these senior officers waffling about in the mess in front of the fire or on Christian name terms, taking absolutely no notice of newcomers or anything else. And we had a meal there, and then I went to a place, Ushermore, which was just a few miles away, which of course a mining village, and we went into one of these mining cottages.
Billets.
We stayed there the first night, and then we were told to look after a squad of doing something. There was a sergeant in charge, but we weren't getting any specific jobs, and
That was a nominal responsibility rather than
just mucking about generally. And then that night at the billet, a message came for Wales to join the 10th Battalion. There were four of us staying there, I don't know who the other two were, but and then there was the message came a bit later for the other two to go somewhere. I think it was on the overseas. I was left alone. And I thought, now what? Anyhow, very early in the morning, another messenger came, and I was to report, I couldn't believe it, to Low Fell, 13th Battalion. I didn't even know there was a 13th Battalion, but I knew where Low Fell was. It was the one I knew, which was in Gateshead. So the truck came, picked me up, took me to the ground station, and there were three other chaps standing there whom I had never seen before. One name was James Dolan, he's newly commissioned, he'd been in Scots Guards. Another called Bob Shaw, who I don't know where he'd been, but he'd been a prospective candidate for Berwickshire or something. I don't remember. But he'd been in the fire, in the army fire, and he had his wings there. But they were a mixed form. And we couldn't believe it when we got chatting, and we got out of Low Fell, no transport or anything, so we, I think we left our stuff there and went to find this house. Well, as a boy, I knew where Low Fell was. On a stroke, just by the entrance of the castle. Anyhow, we found this house, and after no guards on it, but no equipment, vehicles, and after slamming the door for a while, a chap came down in his pajama trousers and his jacket, and he announced he was the adjutant. And he said, well, we've got to report to you. So he means nothing about it, but anyhow, he went in and got some breakfast. But the 13th Battalion had been formed by those people who were too old to go abroad with the territorials, also reservists who'd been called up, and they were officered by First World War officers. The CO was Colonel John Stafford, an ex-9th Battalion man, who was Lord Rangers agent on the British estate. The second in command was the Bowles Hut and Stones, in C, ex 5th Battalion. One of the company commanders was Morgan, he was an architect. And another one was Turvey, Major Turvey, who had a motor business in Sunderland. And there were one or two other guys there, but these were the sort of people we met. And we were told we had been posted there because they were going to take the overflow of the people who had come back from Dunkirk and who hadn't any unions of purpose to other unions, and we were to take them hand in hand and train them. Oh, yes, Peter. So that was our first real job to have here. We were very slow in arriving, but we were found ourselves with these older people whose names also were guarding points on the Tyne, the bridges, set shipyards, ammunition dumps, and Oslet Aerodrome, which was quite near. And two aerodromes in North Yorkshire, they had patterns there. Also, Finkel Abbey, which was quite near Durham, there was a big arms ammunition dump there. So it was spread around. So I seemed to get the job of going to visit these places, particularly on payday, and we were waiting for these young people to arrive, the young soldiers. A few of them came, and they had a tent of camp at Ravenswood Castle. Ravenswood Castle, as I know, was of course sinking. It wasn't usable, but the tent of places were tents. Anyhow, we just made ourselves useful. It was strange among these older officers who had much of a clue and really weren't interested in what was going on. So the four of us really, I think, did a reasonable job.
What